Hello, hello, and welcome to a spooky special episode 15 of Could It Be Podcast. It's only spooky because we made the intro and outro music spooky for this episode, and I'm recording it on the day of Halloween. We're currently hiding from any trick-or-treaters because we didn't prepare for them popping in because I have no self-control around chocolate and I would have eaten anything anyway. So hopefully the weather here in Adelaide today will scare them away without us having to hide. But if you hear the dogs barking in the background, we have had some visitors. I'd like to start today's episode by welcoming my new listeners. So I have noticed since the last episode that I released with Yaglene, I've had a few more people pop up from the US. Welcome and thank you for taking the time to listen to my podcast episodes. And also I recently changed the name of the episode in when you look up breast implant illness in any of the like Spotify, you know, any of those kind of programs. I've added the fact that this is a breast implant illness podcast because Could It Be was just coming up on its own and it might not have been necessarily obvious what this was about. So I think I've possibly reached a few new people that way, which is what this podcast is all about. Just reaching people, sharing my story, letting you know that you're not alone. So thank you for listening in. If you would like to, feel free to share this podcast with anyone that you know that may have breast implant illness, has implants, is considering them. Also, feel free to subscribe and rate the podcast because I believe it does become a bit more visible once I've got that kind of thing happening. So yeah, if you could take a moment of your time, that would be fantastic. I thought I would jump on first with a quick health update. I did mention in one of my previous episodes that I've had some of my symptoms kind of creeping back in and I wasn't quite sure what was going on. So I'm still a bit achy in my joints at the moment, but the hair loss has decreased and that's back around the normal level. So I'm really happy at least that that has happened. I have seen my GP and had some blood tests done. So it was just a generic blood test that she's requested for me. And she also included thyroid function and iron levels. I've had a couple of other things happening. So in one of my prior episodes, I talk about the fact that I've had endometriosis removed via surgery in the past. This was, looking back, 2017 maybe. I'm having some similar pains. It's different times of my cycle and I'm tracking that at the moment in one of my apps, just around when that's occurring. Random spotting and all that kind of thing. This has only really happened since I've explanted, so I don't know if it's related, but she had sort of said, oh look, we'll test thyroid function and your iron levels because they can impact that kind of thing. They can cause spotting. Everything came back normal, which is good in a way, but it was also frustrating because I still have no answers. So all of my normal nutrients, my blood sugar, my cholesterol, they were all really good. The cholesterol is one good thing actually that I have noticed since my explant surgery. And I'm not sure if this is related, but my cholesterol has previously sat higher than the benchmark in Australia and it's decreased since the last time I had it tested. So that's really good news. My thyroid function came in within the required ranges. However, I've always sat fairly high within that range. So my GP has recommended that I do keep track of that. So maybe having a blood test once a year just to see how that is looking. And if that sort of comes outside of the ranges, that's when I guess would get referred on to the appropriate specialists. Look at medication, look at lifestyle changes that I can make to try and help that. So that's one thing that I'm going to keep an eye on. My iron levels also came back normal from what she said as well. So what we're looking at now is whether endometriosis has come back. Yeah, there's constant pelvic pain. I do have the Mirena IUD, which when my GP was looking at different contraception options for me, she said the Mirena was quite good for limiting endometriosis coming back. And I sort of just went with that because any other options, like the pill, wasn't an option for me because I suffered from migraines and it was only once or twice a year, but they were the ocular migraines. And if you have those, you are at a risk of having a stroke, which means my GP surgery will not then prescribe the contraceptive pill. The Mirena was sort of the best option out of all of them for me personally. And yeah, just sort of looking into now whether endometriosis has in fact come back. So I've had scans. We have a specialist imaging service in South Australia and they have nurses that are specifically trained to look for nodules of endometriosis. We couldn't see any when I had the scan. So the smaller ones don't come back on that scan, but anything bigger would be visible. So nothing came back abnormal more when they had a look at that. Now, just some information on what endometriosis is, because people out there may have not heard of what it is. We're slowly getting more awareness out there about it. But endometriosis is a common disease where tissue that is similar to the lining of the womb grows outside of it in other parts of the body. So in Australia, more than 830,000, so around 11% of Australian women, girls, and those who are gender diverse suffer from endometriosis at some point in their life, with the disease often starting in teenage years. So symptoms can be variable, and this can contribute to it taking, I've heard up to 10 years, but the average is about 6.5 years apparently, to diagnose endometriosis. Symptoms can include pelvic pain, can include heavy periods, all sorts of other things. I'll pop a link to this website that I'm looking at the moment. It's endometriosisaustralia.org. I'll pop that in the show notes if you do want to read up about it. But that's something that we're currently looking at. So next steps for me are seeing my previous gynecologist and talking with him about what my options might be. I'm guessing he's going to ask for keyhole surgery just to have a look in there and see what's going on. They gave me a call mid-October this year, and the earliest appointment that he has available is towards the end of January next year, so January 2023. So my next step is that appointment, but in the meantime, I've got like a fitness watch, it's a Garmin watch, and that comes with an app that tracks like your workouts, but you can also track your cycle on that app. So anytime I have any kind of pain or irregular bleeding, I'm putting that in the app so that I can take it to him in that appointment so that he's got as much data there as possible. So I will keep you updated on how that one goes. A friend of the podcast also reached out to me and asked whether I had had any blood tests to look at my hormone levels. So she'd been experiencing some symptoms post-explant and was looking into whether her levels were sort of in the normal ranges. That's one thing that my GP has given me a referral for, but I actually need to time that around my cycle. And with a Mirena, my cycle's more like spotting. Too much information for anyone that does know me, and I'm sorry, but I'm guessing there's a lot of females listening to this podcast, so it's all stuff that we go through. So it's really hard to kind of determine when the end of my period is because I don't really get one. So I think I've just missed my window for having the blood test done this month, so I'll try again next month and see what comes back there. When I talked to the GP about it, she did talk about that specifically tests for polycystic ovarian syndrome, which I have been tested for in the past, that came back negative. So yeah, I don't know what that will achieve. I don't know whether there's different testing that is done in different countries around the world, but yeah, see how that comes back as well. So the next big update, I did talk in previous episodes about trying to find out what kind of implants I had. Apparently when we have breast implants put in, we get a little card. I don't remember ever having one. I probably was given one, but I was 19. You know, my mum was helping me out with a lot of everything, a lot of the decision making and getting me to and from hospital. So it was possibly given to her. I don't remember. I obviously don't have that card. So I had contacted different breast implant device registries. Neither of the ones that we have here in Australia had any record of me. So one thing I did end up doing is contacting my specialist. And it was a bit of back and forth. I had to follow it up a few times. And the nurse ended up looking into my file for me and gave me some details. So these are things that I would recommend that you take down if you are following up with your surgeon or with any breast device registries. These are the specific things that you need information on as to whether your implants might be recalled. So they gave me a reference number. In my case, my reference number was the same for each implant. And then there is a serial number and a lot number for each implant. So make sure you take notes of those. And what I did then is grabbed the reference number. And I looked it up online. And so the actual implants that I had were Allergan brand, and they were textured implants. And when I looked up that brand, when I looked up textured implants, I could see that they had done a recall on their implants in 2019. I was not advised of this by Allergan, by my specialist, by the hospital, by any GPs or anything. So I don't know who the responsibility fell to on that. But I've been sitting here for 3 years with these implants in, not knowing that there was a risk. Now, the risk is what they call BIALCL. That stands for breast implant associated anaplastic large cell lymphoma. It's really hard to say. That's why they give you the acronym for that one. So I'll include a website in the show notes about BIALCL, so the cancer risk for these particular implants. But it is a type of lymphoma that can develop around breast implants. It occurs most frequently in patients who have had breast implants with textured surfaces, so mine were a textured type of implant. It's a cancer of the immune system and it's not a type of breast cancer. So some symptoms for this type of lymphoma include breast enlargement, pain, asymmetry, a lump in the breast or armpit, overlying skin rash, hardening of the breast, or a large fluid collection, typically developing at least more than 1 year after receiving an implant, or on average after 8 to 10 years. For any patient experiencing these symptoms, they should obviously see their GP, get referrals on to their specialist as well. This particular kind of lymphoma has also been found both in silicon and in saline implants, because saline implants, I believe, are still made of silicon on the outside. So they still hold all the same kind of chemicals and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'll include a link that talks about this type of lymphoma. Reading about this is a bit of a realization moment. So when I went to see my specialist for my follow-up after having my breast implants removed, she did say, oh, there were some calcifications through the capsule. They've been sent off for testing, but we haven't received that back yet. And I think this was a couple of weeks after the surgery from memory. And she seemed a little bit frazzled. And she sort of left the room, spoke to the nurse about like my symptoms and how a lot of them had cleared up. Went to the desk and my specialist was waiting there at the desk. And she's like, oh, the labs have actually come back. They're all clear. So I'm guessing the calcification that she found was a bit of a concern for this lymphoma. So really, really happy that that wasn't the case. But like, who was supposed to tell me? And I had to wait a little while to actually record this episode because I was in tears. I was angry. I was madly researching all sorts of stuff. Like, it was just, I don't know how to put this into the right kind of words, but I felt almost violated. I felt let down by the medical industry. I felt let down by a lot of people. And yeah, it just took a little while for me to really soak it all up and understand what risks I had for 3 years, and obviously for longer, but the recall occurred in 2019. I had my implants removed in mid 2022. And yeah, just, I don't know, like, I just feel like more needed to be done. There needed to be more awareness about this recall. You know, if they were depending on us to see a news story, like so many of us use streaming services now, so we don't even see normal free-to-air TV. I don't remember hearing any radio channels talking about it. I would have obviously looked into it if I had. So yeah, I just feel really failed by a lot of things at the moment. So what I did to actually get the confirmation about whether my implants were recalled, the online information was a little confusing, so I sent an email through to the Allergan email address. I'll also include that in the show notes. They did get back to me really quickly, and there were two sections that got back to me. There was like a medical complaint section, and it was almost like a compensation section, and they asked this, like, similar questions, my details, the date that the implants were put in, my surgeon, the date that the implants were taken out, any kind of lab results, like if I had any of those on me. So I got back to them, I provided all the details. I don't actually have a copy of the report after my capsules were sent off for testing, but my specialist's rooms will. So hopefully they will get back to Allergan, and Allergan can get back in contact with me about, you know, anything I need to do, anything I need to monitor, because that's not overly clear. Anything I find online sort of says that once the implant and complete capsule are removed, then your risk is also removed. But I don't know. I struggle to believe that at the moment. So yeah, watch this space. If you're concerned, email Allergan or whoever your implants were made by. So it's not all implant brands that were recalled. There, I know that there was Allergan and then maybe another one or two brands that were. But yeah, definitely follow up on it if it is something that you are concerned by, or if you have any of those symptoms, please go and see your doctor straight away. What I have also done since then, I contacted the Australian Breast Device Registry that I talked about in the previous episode where I gave my 3 month update. I gave them the details of the implants that I'd had put in, the fact that they were recalled and that I was sort of following up the right avenues for that, and they've noted that in their database as well. One other thing that I have done, and I think I've seen people talk about this in the Facebook groups and they've recommended it in the ones that I'm part of in here in Australia, but we've got the TGA, or the Therapeutic Goods Association, and I think it's kind of like in the States the equivalent to the FDA. What the girls have recommended that you do when it comes to the TGA is report your implants as an issue, like as a fault. So the page that I reported it via was on the TGA website, and it's the section where you report an adverse event or problem as a consumer. I'll link this in the show notes as well. But basically I filled in that form and I've explained the capsular contracture that I experience, because that is something that is a reportable issue with implants. But I've also strategically placed in there the symptoms that I've had of breast implant illness, and sort of worded it that it's an inflammatory response that my body has had to the implants that has since resolved since the surgery. Because I have a feeling that if I throw in the words breast implant illness, the fact that it's not yet a diagnosable medical condition here in Australia, that they'll just like blow it off. they'll just throw it under the carpet and not listen to me, because they might assume that I'm a conspiracy theorist, or I've just learnt this via social media and this is just a fad. Like, it is not. We know for certain, talking to all of the people that have gone through explant and felt better, it's not something we're making up. So strategically place that in my report form, that like these are the symptoms that I've had that have resolved since surgery and they're like inflammatory response. So that might be something that you want to consider in your own country, or if you're in Australia, the TGA website, just to let them know what's happening. So that's all for me. I don't really have much else to update. I've been able to exercise still. I am sort of changing my training now to doing sort of a cardio-based workout in the mornings, and then a couple of nights a week I'm doing weights. The weather is warming up here in Adelaide and my home gym is out in the carport, so it is exposed to the weather a little bit, so it's a bit easier to get out there. It's also daylight saving, so it's lighter until later at night. I'm recovering from my workouts really well. Like, there was one, like my first really big leg workout, I was very sore, but I was sore for 2 days. I didn't have any sort of issues after that like I would have had before my explant surgery, so I'm super happy with how that's all going. My energy levels are a lot better. I tolerate less sleep for longer than I would have before explanting. I still get tired throughout the day sometimes, and specifically when I have to do training at work. I don't know what it is, but sitting still and looking at a screen and only doing that without typing or thinking too much about something, I end up just getting super sleepy. But that's just always been me. I remember that being a thing back when I was in school. Yeah, so like life-wise, everything's going pretty well. I do have a few more people who have reached out and would like to be on an episode of the podcast. So in a few weeks' time, hopefully we'll have a next co-host on the podcast. But I'm more than happy to interview as many people as possible. So if you're listening to this now and you haven't yet got in contact with me, feel free to reach out. Like, I'm gentle, I don't bite. I try to make the recording experience as easy as possible for you. So please reach out to me. You can do that on the Instagram or on the newish Facebook page. I'm not very good at keeping the Facebook page updated, but I do receive the notifications and stuff through that one. So yeah, feel free to contact me, and we can organize something if you do want to be on the podcast. And also, if you've ever got any feedback or anything that you would like me to discuss, again, feel free to reach out on either of those two. And I'll see how I can work that into an episode. Thank you again for following along with my story here, and I appreciate all of you, and I hope you're all keeping well and stay spooky. Until next time, see ya.